Hello, listener. Welcome to yet one more episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes. When will they stop? When will it end? I don't know. I can't possibly say.
When you,
say.
The listeners, decide that you just can't take any more, or possibly yes. We run out of political things to talk about.
Yes, which actually is kind of an interesting thing to say, given that today, in this episode, Emma.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, and me, Steve. Hello, listener. Hello, Emma. We're going to talk about probably the one political drama series our listener might have heard of, The West Wing. I mean, it's something
finally
that we've kept...
they get there. All the listeners finally. Are like, how has it taken you this long?
Because The West Wing needs all the publicity it can get, so we thought we might give them a little boost, so that more people might hear of it. I mean, it has to be probably the single most famous, at least American, and probably in this country, in Britain. We're talking from Britain, listener, in case you didn't know. Probably, even in Britain, probably the most famous political drama series about politics. Does the listener need to know anything, you know, a bit of background about The West Wing, Emma, do you think?
I think maybe we'll just kind of give a slight preamble just to pretend. Yeah. For the one listener who's never heard of The West Wing and has no idea of which we speak.
Yes. Well, I especially looked at Wikipedia for this, so I got the basic facts. So, listener, The West Wing is no longer with us. The West Wing ran from 1999 and the 20th century into 2006 for, I don't know, 7 or 8 seasons. And there's probably about 30 episodes per season. I mean, there's a shed load of episodes.
23, I think.
Right, yes. And... it is set in, as the title suggests, in the West Wing of the White House, and it focuses on a small number of staffers and advisors and spin doctors, although the term spin doctor is never used, people who are supporting the presidency of Jed Bartlet. And it takes us through all kinds of trials and tribulations behind this and gives us a behind-the-scenes look, or what purports to be a behind-the-scenes look, at what these people get up to. And I think it's probably important to realise that the president is a liberal, is a Democrat. He's a very liberal Democrat.
Do you think?
Yeah. So when they even say in the series, just in case you hadn't noticed, you know, this is the most liberal president we're ever likely to get for years. So just points it out.
I mean, that's so funny, because when I look back now, he seems very centrist from the way progressive politics has moved on in America.
Yes. But at the time, he was very, very liberal. I mean, certainly domestically. I mean, he tries. Everybody that of the central characters are all good-hearted. They're on the side of the angels. They don't quite get it right all the time. Sometimes we might think they've done the wrong thing, but they do the wrong thing for the right reasons, always for the right reasons. So that's kind of, I think that's a kind of a setup, isn't it, really? What we thought we'd do, listener, is that we talk 2 episodes that start the 4th season, which began in the autumn of 2002. And these are, it's like part 1 and part 2, these episodes, which has 3 of the central characters in The West Wing getting lost in what was the state? Was it Indiana, in the middle of nowhere, effectively, in American terms. And they get left behind by the president's motorcade, because the president is seeking re-election. He wants to get a second term. And as a consequence of getting left behind, they do a kind of trains, planes and automobiles kind of an attempt to get back to Washington. And as a consequence, they meet ordinary people, they talk to them, they realise things about themselves and maybe how a bit more elitist they are than maybe they think. And they kind of, you know, there's a journey. They go on a journey,
literally,
don't they, Emma?
And figuratively.
Literally and figuratively. So is that a fair summary of those 2 episodes?
Absolutely. And I think it's that kind of the East Coast elite meets Middle America, hilarity ensues kind of a thing. And they're kind of self-aware about who they are. So there's a bit where... Josh and Toby have a bet, and whoever loses the bet has to, every time they tell someone their name, they have to follow it with, and I work in the White House.
Yes, because they know that that's
just going to make them sound like pricks.
Yes, and it's going to go down really badly with those rural Indianans, yeah, or whatever they're called, because they're all Republicans, aren't they? And yeah, and they actually, or virtually everybody they come across basically says, I'm for the other guy. I didn't vote for Bartlett once. I'm not going to vote for him again. You know, get lost. So, yeah, it's...
You also have a very odd foray into the arguments around daylight savings times.
Yeah, we get to know a bit about middle America. I mean, literally the middle of America.
Which is bizarrely quite a big issue in Democratic politics. I only know this because I listen to various American political podcasts, and John Lovett, who does a couple of the ones I listen to, is obsessed with daylight savings and abolishing it and having right, one time zone.
I thought it was a joke. So, yeah.
No, it really is a thing. It's a thing, okay, here. It's one of the things that divides England and Scotland, is our attitude to daylight savings. So,
That won't be our problem soon.
You're showing off your metropolitan liberalness now, not knowing this.
Scotland can rule itself as it wishes. So they're going at this journey, don't they? And to some extent, it's slightly patronising. I mean, it's because it ends, doesn't it? As they get to some comfort inn, and they end up meeting an ordinary guy who's taken his daughter to, is it Notre Dame, just to see, you know, because she's of the age of going to university. And he talks to them.
We call it Notre Dame, but they call it Notre Dame.
Yeah, this is England, darling. This is England. They can, you know, we'll talk about it in the way that we wish to.
I think in 3 years we've been doing this, it's the first time you've ever called me darling.
Yeah, It's 8:15 in the evening, listener. So this is kind of zeitgeist taped after dark. This is when it all gets a bit
weird.
Which
is how we met, to be fair.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, that's a story for the memoirs. Anyway, absolutely. So they meet a guy, you know, they're actually, Toby and Josh are soaked to the skin because they've been caught in the rain, because they've had all these misfortunes. And they end up in this hotel waiting for a plane or something. And they meet an ordinary guy. I mean, he's not an ordinary guy. He's quite middle class. You know, he's actually quite a middle class white guy who's having, you know, his daughter's upstairs in the hotel room. She's just seen Notre Dame. And he's talking to them about, you know, I'm a working guy, you know, and he's clearly, you know, making a bit of money, and his wife's working too. But they're finding it a little bit hard because, you know, Notre Dame is going to, you know, the fees are going to be huge, enormous, you know. But it's like, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to put my daughter, you know, through college. But if only it could be just a little bit easier. And that goes into, they eventually go, oh, that sounds, yeah, we need to make ordinary white folks who want to afford, middle-class white folks who can barely afford to send their children to college, make it a little bit easier. And they actually, there's a policy, isn't there? They in the end, later in the seat, in that season, they come up with a policy, and it actually feeds into the president's agenda. So it's kind of a bit sweet and sickly at that level, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then the West Wing did have a tendency to steer into that. And what you have to remember is that from season 4 onwards, it wasn't Aaron Sorkin anymore. That was after he left at the end of season 3. And I think they leaned into his sentimentality without sometimes undercutting it the way that he would often do more often. So while they did that a bit, and they didn't completely lose the tone, there was, I think, more sentimentality as the seasons went on.
Well, this season 4 is one of transition, because he is still around and he writes some of them, but some of the episodes aren't written by him. So yeah, there's clearly, you know, he's kind of, I think he was under some degree of stress. I think I can put it like that.
I think that's a very polite way of putting it, yeah.
Yes, and I've just checked with my lawyers. That's all right. Don't say anything more specific than that. So there was, yeah, I think some episodes lean towards the saccharine sweet bit than others. But I think it is important to know about Aaron Sorkin, because it was his idea. You know, he didn't do the theme tune. That was W.G. Snuffy Walden.
Snuffy Walden, who also
Snuffy
did
Walden, W.G. Snuffy Walden. Yes, that's something I've learned from watching those episodes. He didn't do the theme tune, but he did virtually everything else. He created it. He wrote most of the early episodes, as you were saying, though he had to be, I think, taken out by a stretcher at the end of season four. And
for the first two seasons, he was also doing Sports Night at the same time.
Was he?
So, blimey. Yeah. Yes. They overlapped, so he was just exhausted.
And he also wrote the film The American President, which kind of inspired the series as well. And, of course, he's done all kinds of other films, like Charlie Wilson's War and all those others that I can't remember. And
what about Facebook, Social Network?
Oh, yeah, yes. And the ones about politics have all got a common kind of theme, haven't they? I mean, he's in love with the American Constitution, isn't he? I mean, he thinks it's a brilliant... I mean, like Frank Capra did in the 1940s, 30s, he thought, this is a brilliant document, right? If only we can make it work. And in the West Wing, he's got the people, hasn't he? They want to make it work. They want to try and make it work.
Yeah, it's a really idealized vision of politics in a really lovely way, but a way that, I mean, you couldn't make a British West Wing. We're just far too cynical. And he's completely in love with the idea that politics works. One of the lines that people constantly quote from the film, from the show, is why does it take six committed people in the room to make a difference? And it's because that's all that's ever worked. He really believes in that power of people to make that difference. And unfortunately, in the 20 or so years since the West Wing's been on, Congress has been in a complete standstill. So, and I think there is a lot of exploration of that, particularly in later years, about why it doesn't actually work. The gears of government get gritted up pretty badly.
Mm. And the West Wing shows instances of, you know, things not working. I mean, the intentions are good, but the system doesn't allow things to happen. Butler is always trying to do gun control, and he never quite really ever does it. And then, certainly in this season, there's kind of references to not being some crazy Republican trying to put something in a foreign policy bill that stops people in receipt of government of American money even talking about birth control, and them having to accept it. So it shows compromises and how difficult that can be sometimes.
And what they do quite cleverly is have people within the West Wing disagree on an issue so that they can have the arguments. Alison Janney, they're killing the women. And that's one of my favourite moments in the whole thing. You know, he has to go out and sell this policy. And 5 seconds before she's on the press podium, she's in tears to Toby saying, they're killing the women and we're going to send them fighter planes.
Yes, yeah. So, and that's actually, there's kind of, I mean, the central characters are all mostly men. I mean, there's two women. I mean, if you count the first lady, there's three, but she's not in it all the time. But there's two women. One of them is CJ Craig, and she is the press press officer. And Donna is a kind of glorified secretary, really, isn't she? Though I think she gets promoted at the end of the series.
Yeah. She doesn't get promoted for years and years and years. She doesn't get promoted. And she works for Josh and she works for Josh. And she keeps trying to get Josh to recognise that she should be doing more. But Josh relies on her too much. Yeah. And then she tells Josh, I'm going to leave. And he doesn't believe her. And then one day she's gone. And she gets a job working for one of the vice presidential candidates, one of the ones who isn't the one that Josh is backing. And then in the end, it all kind of works out and she gets a job doing other things. But she is held back by Josh, and we're supposed, I think, to see this as romantic. There are some troubling elements to Josh and Donna's relationship.
Yes. And there's only one black character of any consequence, really.
Two.
The chief of staff?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in it. Yeah, he's not really he's a kind of second order, but yeah, he's in it. But the main...
Well, I suppose there's Fitz and Nancy, so maybe they make one character between them.
And with the added bonus that Nancy's black and a woman. Yes, it's a twofer. So, but Charlie is the main non-white character, who is ironically basically he does the president's post, although they kind of enhance the role so it becomes apparently more important than it really is. So it's kind of, I mean, it's kind of, it is, yeah, you were sort of saying how maybe got a bit more centrist. I mean, it's always really centrist, as far as we're concerned, isn't it? Because American left-wingers are quite centrist, even.
You know, yeah, absolutely, sort of even, yeah.
Yeah. So it's sort of late Clinton centrism, really, isn't it? But more progressive in
yeah,
politics.
And I think if you look at who were the advisors, a lot of them were former Clinton people.
Yeah.
So it sort of makes sense that that's what they were kind of coming to it and saying, well, this is how it works in politics.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jed Bartlett was basically Bill Clinton with his trousers on, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And with a more liberal actual centre to him, whereas Bill Clinton, who knows where.
So I think Bill Clinton was liberal on social issues, social issues, but very centrist on foreign affairs.
Yes.
And economically, just completely not at all really of the left.
Yeah.
Economics isn't
really mentioned at all in the West Wing. Apart from the Dow's.
Jeff Bartlett is an economist.
Yeah, but they don't really, the Dow's up, you know, and employment's down, and they talk about things like that, but there's no debate. I mean, that's American politics, I suppose. It's all the market. They don't ever really engage in anything beyond the market, do they?
They once, at one point, Josh Molina, who plays Will Bailey, describes the veil of ignorance and why that matters in making tax policy. But I think that may be, remembering that as a standout rather than...
I didn't really care for Will Bailey at all as a character.
Will is not a popular character. I quite like him, but I mean, I believe, I don't know if it still is, I may look it up, but I believe that Joshua Molina's Twitter biography is "I'm the man who ruined the West Wing."
Yeah, I think that's a bit unfair, but the character thing is, you put the politics aside. We haven't really finished with the politics, but just put it to one side for a bit. I think it's so well written. I mean, I can get about 70% of the dialogue. That's why the two episodes we watched were good because it was mostly set outside in the countryside, so I could hear what they were saying. Whereas most of the time, it's all in the West Wing, and they're going around the corridors talking, you know, saying witty things, blah, blah, blah. And you can barely catch what they're saying, which is really good.
A lot of people who watch it with the subtitles on for that exact reason.
But it's good. You've got to concentrate. I mean, I think that's a good thing, really.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. No, this is not something that you can sort of be half on Twitter, half watching the West Wing. You've really got to keep with it, absolutely. And they have those long, long tracking shots where they do what they call a walk and talk.
Yes,
loads of exposition as they walk round and round the actual set of the West Wing.
But the exposition's done very well, so you don't notice it is exposition.
No, you don't notice it. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and there's lots of zingers flying around, lots of really good lines. And there's some really good comedy in it. I mean, there's drama in it. There's drama, there's comedy, there's no music, apart from by W.G. Snuffy Walden, the theme tune.
One of my favourite moments is actually a visual joke, so I'm not sure how well describing it on podcast will work, but C.J. Craig is famously very tall, and in fact, her CIA tagline is Big Bird. Mm. And there's an episode where Abby Bartlett, the First Lady, who is a doctor, Dr. Abby Bartlett, she is inoculating Muppets to doing an episode of Sesame Street where she's inoculating the Muppets to sort of show kids that inoculations aren't scary and they're good fun and all of that. Mm. And there's just this moment where actual Big Bird and Alice and Janney are sat next to each other on a bench and they just share this look, and it was just chef's kiss.
There's moments like that, which again, it's really, really well put together. I counted the storylines that were in the two episodes. I mean, I don't know if other dramas have so many storylines, but there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the storyline of Josh and Toby and Donna being lost, that was just one. There were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Other storylines that were going on at the same time. So it did. I mean, this was American mainstream American TV. It wasn't on HBO or anything. I think it did demand a lot. I mean, do dramas have that many storylines going on? And everyone's showing ding, 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 ding in terms of all their conversations. I mean, it's really good.
And I think one of the reasons that it's so held up and is to this day is because it never patronised the audience. You know, it never said to the audience... I mean, I would say that veil of ignorance thing that I was harking back to is probably the most explanatory they got about stuff. Because usually they'd just go, it's HR1, blah, blah, blah. They never said, House Resolution 1, and this is how a bill is made, and this is how a law is made. You know, they just kind of assumed a certain amount of intellect. If you don't know, we know you'll look it up.
Yes. Yes. But one of the storylines, while you're drinking to cover up your cough there.
Sorry.
It's after dark. Anything can happen on Zeitgeist Tapes after dark.
I mean, to be fair, I'm drinking Diet Coke. I would like to point that out.
Yes, yeah, you won't knock it. Yeah. And I've just been drinking fizzy water. So anyway. But one of the storylines, I wonder what you think about. It's the Kumar thing. Because at the end of season 3, Jed Bartlett, who starts off as president, I mean, he had no military experience. He's got severe doubts about the military. He's ignorant about them. He doesn't really like the idea of there being a military. And he has to be inducted into the sit room, which is this sort of glamorous, dark bunker with lots of flashing lights where loads of generals sit and they make dangerous decisions. At the end of season 3, he is reluctantly induced to order what is an illegal assassination of a prince of Kumar, which is a made-up Middle Eastern state. I mean, I think it might be Yemen, which is meant to be an ally of the United States, but is actually harboring terrorists. And this guy, this prince, is one of those terrorists and apparently is going off to San Francisco to blow up, of all things, the Golden Gate Bridge, like you do, right? And the only way to stop it is by killing him and pretending it's been a plane crash. So the American forces do that. And Jed Bartlett, at the end of season 3, has been going, oh, should I not? And then he makes his decision. And so the start of season 4, now it's, is anyone going to find out? You know, what's the fallout? Will they? But I thought it was kind of interesting because this was an illegal act and you are taken through the pros and the cons. Should I not? There's this issue that is. But he does it and he thinks it's the right decision. And because it's Jed Bartlett and we all love Jed Bartlett and he does the right thing for the right reasons, maybe, you know, doesn't get it there all the time. But we kind of aren't, we're meant to endorse that, aren't we? You know,
we are. And I felt really uncomfortable with it, I have to admit. That was the moment where that was my least comfortable part of the West Wing was the extrajudicial killing. And not just the extrajudicial killing, but the self-righteousness about the extrajudicial killing, particularly from Leo. Who's Jed Bartlett's chief of staff and best friend. Because what Kumar do, quite cleverly, really, is turn around and blame Israel. And, of course, they kind of know it was the Americans, but they know that the Americans aren't going to admit it, but they can make a lot more trouble blaming Israel than they can if they blame the Americans. So it makes a lot more sense. And, you know, so they do that. And Leo gets on his high horse about them blaming Israel and, you know, gets very, very angry. And the Middle Eastern politics are very much of the early 2000s and not of the more nuanced place that the left has got to now. And I was just like, but you're getting cross that they're saying somebody else did it when you know you did it. I just don't think you have the moral high ground here.
No, those episodes, they would have all been made in 2002. And so, i.e. less than a year after 9/11. And there was a special,
there was a special standalone episode. At the time, everyone kind of loved and now is kind of seen as a little bit.
Yeah, because it was like the opposite of Seamus Milne's view of the matter. It's like, why did they do that to us? Because we're so good. It was effectively what they were saying. And which was kind of, well, you don't quite get the point there, though, do you? I mean, without going all Seamus Mill. And but there
has to be a middle ground.
Yeah. But
not to be all soft left on you.
Yes. No, we don't know. Dangerous position to be in. But they allow different characters to say different things, but ultimately we are led to that conclusion that it was a righteous act. And it kind of, I mean, it's kind of interesting to watch The West Wing to try and understand how Americans think. Because, if you think that was kind of, well, it was kind of wrong, but also kind of right, then something, you know, and you're doing it for that audience and you're expecting them to all go, yeah, fair enough. So you kind of get an insight into mainstream American opinion. Like you say, it was, you know, it's the early 2000s. But yeah, it's, and the way that Jed Bartlett falls in love with the military, I mean, it's kind of sad, you know.
Well, I'm not sure it's so much following. I see it as very similar to the Blair dilemma, where you have, because your party, in terms of Blair rather than him himself, have been seen and have a sort of tradition of pacifism or have, at least certainly for the decade in which he was first elected, been seen as anti-military, you have to embrace it much, much harder than a conservative would have to. And I think that that's where Bartlett's probably coming from, that I will wipe them off the face of the earth because I have to prove I'm a tough guy and a tougher guy than people would think I am.
I don't know. I think that does Jed, certainly Jed, a disservice. I think he genuinely feels that he's doing the right thing. And that these people in the military, I mean, you know, who are all about, because Martin Sheen, who plays Jed Bartlett, not the tallest man in the world. And all the people who are in the military seem to be at least 2 foot taller than him and about 3 foot wider. And they've got all the awards on their, you know, for bombing Vietnam and stuff like that on their chests. And I think he genuinely respects them and falls in with, you know, the military, the martial values that they kind of articulate. I mean, he's deep respect for the American military.
He definitely respects the military. But yeah. I think in terms of his willingness to take action, sometimes that's a willingness to show that he to take action, not simply a willingness to do the right thing.
Yeah,
I think there's politics in there. But Jed Bartlett, whatever his other faults, is definitely a politician.
Yes. But anyway, I think we've got a disagreement on that one, on that one, listener. So make your own mind up and email us or text us or something about what you think about Jed Bartlett. But yes, so is there anything that we haven't really talked about? Because we seem to cover a lot of ground very quickly.
We should talk about some of the rhetoric.
Oh, God, yes.
If we have a listen to this clip.
We've got a clip. Forgot the clip. So... should I? I'll just say what the context for this is. This is from I think the second of the two episodes, and one of the storylines is there's a pipe bomb attack on a swimming meet at a high school or a college. Yeah,
I think we're supposed to assume that this is high schoolers attacking high schoolers.
Kind of like a gun crime thing, and Jed Bartlett makes a speech on the night of the atrocity, let the listener listen.
Securing peace in a time of global conflict, sustaining hope in this winter of anxiety and fear. More than any time in recent history, America's destiny is not of our own choosing. We did not seek, nor did we provoke, an assault on our freedom and our way of life. We did not expect, nor did we invite, a confrontation with evil. Yet the true measure of a people's strength is how they rise to master that moment when it does arrive. 44 people were killed a couple of hours ago at Tennyson State University. 3 swimmers from the men's team were killed and 2 others are in critical condition. When after having heard the explosion from their practice facility, they ran into the fire to help get people out. Ran into the fire. The streets of heaven are too crowded with angels tonight. There are students and our teachers and our parents and our friends. The streets of heaven are too crowded with angels. But every time we think we've measured our capacity to meet a challenge, We look up and we're reminded that that capacity may well be limitless. This is a time for American heroes. We will do what is hard. We will achieve what is great. This is a time for American heroes, and we reach for the stars. God bless their memory. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
And I think that really sums up the West Wing, to me anyway, sums up the West Wing. I mean, they're kind of, I mean, when I saw that in the context of the episode, and I'd seen it before, a few times before, I was starting to cry, you know, I was really starting to cry. And then it ends with Bruno saying to Sam that, you know, then it undercuts it a little bit. So you get that kind of schmaltzy, inspirational, I don't know how you would characterize that rhetoric. And then it's a bit of a joke, kind of just to kind of bring you back up again.
It is gorgeous rhetoric. You know he stole it, right?
No, I don't know that he stole it.
Because if you listen to Tom Hanks's acceptance speech when he won the Oscar for Philadelphia, I think was mid to early 90s.
Right.
There's line, the streets of streets of heaven are far too crowded with angels tonight, is from that. And it's about all the people that we lost in the AIDS crisis.
Do we know who wrote Tom Hanks's acceptance speech, though? Because maybe it was
Aaron
Sorkin.
It might have been Aaron Sorkin, actually, now you think about it.
the writing is top-notch. And when Aaron Sorkin gets onto his high horse about how great the American Constitution is, or the possibility of the American Constitution and the idealism therein, it gets to that kind of level. And Bartlett is usually the means by which he says all that.
And you can absolutely see why Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I would say is an equivalent artist, is such a fan. Have you ever heard Lin-Manuel Miranda's What Next rap?
No.
Well, I will add that in the show notes. It's absolutely fabulous. And it's kind of lots of, and he clearly knows the West Wing inside and out. So it's lots of really famous lines, lots of famous phrases from the West Wing put into a rap. Of which the chorus is Bartlett saying, "What's next?" which is always a key part of the West Wing. If you want to shut down a conversation, Bartlett says, "What's next?" And that means that he's ready to move on. He's made his mind up. Stop right. going on.
Mm. So what do you think? I mean, we were watching it today. In 2021, it stopped being broadcast in 2000 and Checks Notes 2006. From today's perspective, I mean, it wouldn't, I thought that you were think you were suggesting, it wouldn't necessarily pass complete muster. I mean, they'd certainly think women, there might be a woman president. In fact, there was a series that followed called Commander in Chief that was trying to be like the West Wing, but it was terrible and had a woman president and more, and maybe a black president, maybe more black characters. But substantively, how different do you think it would be? I mean, is the idea of a Jed Bartlett president in the United States ridiculous, or is Joe Biden maybe slightly revised?
I think that is what Joe Biden is trying.
You can have a decent guy.
Yeah, that kind of, you can have a decent guy, you can be a nice guy, you can be a clever guy. You don't have to be an asshole to be president. And I think, Barack Obama, the character Matt Santos, who eventually won the presidency in the final season, although he wasn't supposed to. Originally, Santos was going to lose, but the actor, John Spencer, who played Leo, who was running as Santos's deputy, died during that season. And the showrunners just decided we can't both kill off Leo and have them lose the presidency. So they changed the ending completely. Okay. But Matt Santos was based on Barack Obama.
Right.
I guess we kind of had a sandwich of
because he's Hispanic. I mean, but the name might have implied that
Hispanic,
to our listener.
Yeah.
But he's Hispanic, Matt Santos.
But the idea of and a lot his kind of positioning is very Obama-esque. So maybe we've got we've had Obama before Trump and Bartlett after Trump, which is sort of the wrong way round. But
yeah. But the Republicans, I mean, that there were people that called the West Wing the left wing, which, you know, in American terms, it obviously was in many instances, given the agenda that Bartlett embraced. But Republicans don't really come out of it too brilliantly. I mean, the guy Ritchie, who is contesting
Ritchie's
the presidential election,
George W. Bush, isn't he?
Well, I thought he was. I mean, well, he was kind of a mixture of Ronald Reagan and maybe George W.
Mince. It was thick as mints.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Well, Ronald Reagan. I mean, you know, arguably, some people didn't think he was too clever. So yeah, he was kind of Reagan-esque, but he was thick. I mean, he was incredibly thick, and that was the kind of what they were trying to say about the nature of that particular contest. We want to have a clever guy as president than a thick guy taking notes from lots of dodgy
also,
guys.
What was interesting was they poll tested it over and over again, and Bartlett was always seen as, you know, superior and clever, and yeah. And they, in the end, what they said, you were never going to get rid of that, so you have to lean into it.
Yes, let Bartlett be Bartlett.
Let Bartlett be Bartlett. But also, there's a meeting between Ritchie and Bartlett, and one of Bartlett's special secret service, who was dating CJ Craig, has just been shot. And Bartlett says this to Ritchie, and he says, "Crime, boy, I don't know." And then at the end of the meeting, Bartlett turns around and says, "When I beat you hollow, crime, boy, I don't know. That was the moment I decided to do it."
Yes. So it's kind of an argument for clever people to be in politics. Which,
I think may be idealised.
Yeah, slightly idealised. Because clever people in politics don't always lead to... good outcomes, naming no wars or anything. but what the one thing that I mean, it's kind of in America, the American context, it's not so unusual to have such an optimistic, positive view of people in politics, you know, trying their best, don't always work, but the heart's in the right place. If the Democrats, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like you were saying, in this country, it's hard to think of a West Wing being a possibility because we don't have that optimistic sense of what politics can possibly do.
Although I have to say that the West Wing has had a really corrosive effect on British politics. Again, I'll put a link in the show notes to a blog I wrote a few years ago about this. Because, I mean, I adore The West Wing. I've watched and watched and rewatched and rewatched and rewatched it. And there's probably not an episode I haven't seen five or six times at least. But I am so fed up with 20-something-year-old men running around the Labour Party thinking they're Josh fucking Lyman and Sam fucking Seaborn. And, you know, it just drives you slightly mad.
That might have gone now, though. I mean, they might have moved on to other things.
Well, it
do
hadn't
they?
Gone 3 or 4 years ago.
Really? All right,
I mean, I would say that the Corbynistas didn't worship the West Wing in the same way that people who came before did, but they're not the only people in the Labour Party.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it did.
And then even Corbyn, they had a let Corbyn be Corbyn, explicitly stated in that manner, strategy. Yes. They had a let Ed be Ed strategy before that. Neither of which worked out particularly well for the Labour Party.
Yeah, because he weren't Jed Bartlett. You know, the thing about let Bartlett be Bartlett was because Bartlett's quite good.
A, they weren't Jed Bartlett. And B, we have a completely different system.
Yes. Although when Gordon Brown was preparing to become prime minister for like an age, there were some meetings, some briefings that I think the John Smith Institute was holding in Number 11. And unusually, I mean, exceptionally, I've never been in Number 11. I was in this meeting.
Number 11 had the best breakfast.
Well, I had a bit of breakfast there, but the noteworthy thing was that one of the speakers, I forget what the actual subject was, it was all preparing for Gordon Brown's glorious first term as prime minister. And somebody, one of the speakers was actually quoted Leo McGarry about, you know, people don't want to see politics, it's like making sausages, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking, blimey, you were starting swearing because it's after dark. Flipping that, you know, this is, you know, Leo McGarry's not a real person, right? But anyway, and everybody knew, everyone in the room knew it.
That's what I mean by the corrosive effect, is that we start thinking this is real and it could work. Whereas, you know, it's very idealised. And, you know, we need, in the blog that I write, for example, One of the things that you're never going to see is Jeb Bartlett shaking hands in a shopping precinct in Widnes. Whereas every prime minister is going to have to do that at some point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. They couldn't get all the Secret Service people into Widnes, let alone exactly. The shopping Widnes. Yes. But there was some research on the effect of the West Wing on audiences. And surprisingly enough or not, it made people that watched the West Wing, they actually felt more positive about the outgoing president, Bill Clinton, and the incoming president, George Bush. It actually made people feel more positive about real politics. And, given the level of cynicism, in the United States, it's pretty there. And in Britain,
was this a randomised sample, or was this people who'd opted to watch The West Wing?
Oh no, it was an audience survey. So they basically a bunch of students who were gathered in that survey answers some questions before you see it, and then answers questions after it. So it's kind of a bit, it did show something, and not surprisingly, because The West Wing, the people are lovely. Toby, yeah. Josh, Donna, Jed. Leo,
and I wanted to be
CJ,
CJ, and I wanted to kiss Josh,
Charlie.
But they're not real.
No, I know that. Yes, sadly, they're not real. Sam, I forgot Sam, of course.
Oh, who doesn't want to kiss Sam?
Well, many people, possibly. My ultimate feeling about The West Wing is I love it and I hate it all at the same time. I'm very ambiguous, but after watching those first two episodes, I just slid into watching the whole of the rest of the fourth season. So I would, if listener, you haven't ever seen an episode of The West Wing, I mean, it's free to watch on all four. It's got some irritating adverts in between, so try and forget those, but it certainly is worth it. And if you've seen it before, it's worth seeing again, I think. That's mine.
Oh, absolutely. And I can get lost in a sort of YouTube West Wing clips rabbit hole until the cows come home. I sort of look up and it's 2 a.m.
Yes. Well, gosh, goodness me. Yes.
Yeah, well, as we were discussing before the podcast, I'm a night person and you're a morning person.
I'm a very morning person. And I can see on my clock, it's in Manchester, it's 12 minutes to 9. So, what's the time in London, Emma?
It's how many December hours, 1941 how many days, how many years in Casablanca.
Yes. So I think on that bombshell about our different habits, then I think possibly best to draw to a close, and I can go and watch the second half of Manchester United, Granada. And so it just behoves me to thank Emma for her comments.
Thank you, Steve.
And myself for my comments, and to also thank Lord Stuart Wood for our theme tune, not WD Snuffy Walden. We went somewhere more classy, obviously.
Obviously.
And to invite our listener, if they haven't yet, and why haven't you? For goodness sake, why haven't you yet rated and reviewed the podcast on whatever platform you happen to listen to this wonderful thing? Please do. And finally, I'm legally obliged to remind you this is a political human production.